Group meeting, Friday, 21st January, 1977. What do you notice about trying an experiment like that? Anybody? What is the essential thing with respect to oneself, one's own organism?
Quietens it.
Exactly. It quietens down. The body becomes, the body gets into the state of ease. I'm not using the word relax because that word sometimes gets associated in the background of our mind with floppiness. You tell a person to relax, and if he's not in a very serious mood, he'll smile and just make a gesture like that of floppiness of the body. No. Being completely at ease. And remember that the living body, in perfect ease, demonstrates the perfect balance of opposing tensions throughout the body. And with it, the psyche, the turmoil of the psyche, calms down. It doesn't calm down into a static condition, like a cup of tea which is just sitting there doing nothing. There is a vibrancy about it. It's an extraordinary state of the psyche, and it's a happy state. This state of the psyche is truly happy, because it is not in thrall to pleasure on the one hand, or to any discomfort or pain on the other hand. This state of vibrant quiescence is the truly happy state, the state of supreme balance, poise. Now, if we are listening rightly, you will find that the solar plexus will not be in any state of strain, because most of our tensions, the wrong sort of tensions, not the balance of opposing tensions, but the stressful condition, registers there usually first. And also in the neck muscles, and the muscles around the eyes and the jaw, all the facial muscles. These are the places where these strains register immediately. If there is emotional upset, your viscera immediately register. But this vibrant quiescence is the state of healthy being. What will you notice? Try and let the body, the organism, the psychophysical organism, be in this state. What happens to your breathing now? It's perfectly rhythmic. It's rhythmic, and it becomes very peaceful. And this is your own unique life rhythm, your life pulsation. And you'll notice it's full of extraordinary power of a totally different sort from power as we ordinarily experience it. Strength, energy flowing out, and this, that, and the other. It is a quiet, non-resisting, non-imposing power. And there's an extraordinary almightiness about it. See, this is the real pranayama, one aspect of it. The real pranayama. And it is a happy state. It is not the mortification of the breath rhythm. The word yama, one of its meanings is mortification. It is not that. It is perfect release. It's not a release from this, that, and the other to this, that, and the other, but just pure release in itself. And experiencing this, there is real knowledge of your own life rhythm. When, in the religious context, to the yogic context, to the mystical context, you have real knowledge, it has gone beyond words and concepts, but can be presented in a conceptual, verbal formulation, which is only suggestive. But the actual experiencing is so easy, really, is it not? It happens. Why? Because one is not striving to bring about a result. This is how we actually are in our inner real being. You have heard me use this phrase, it is constitutive of your being. So this is what it is. Pranayama. Prana is life, not merely breath. Breath is the most obvious and concretest expression and symbol of the word prana. Because remember, prana is applied to Brahman in the Upanishads. It is applied to God in the theistic religions. God is life eternal. This is prana. What can life eternal mean? It can't mean a particular aspect or form of life, because that is within the limitation of space and time. It is enclosed within the sphere of mortality. But life eternal is utterly free of limitation, of constriction within the sphere of mortality. Supposing we ask ourselves, what is it that brings about this constriction to the sphere of mortality? ignorance, desire, isolated self-consciousness. Isolated self-consciousness. Not real, the reality of self-consciousness. These are amongst three of the most powerful influences at play. As long as particularly these three are at play, people will always strive for freedom. They will fight for freedom. Oppose and destroy whatsoever stands in the way of their desire. And in that destruction is seen the manifestation of the complete denial of true freedom. Just try and sense this freedom, the psychophysical organism at peace. Your life rhythm established. And if you prefer, keep your eyes open and see the people here, the objects here. Some of you may hear this motor at work inside this recorder. And you can experience the relationship between your own life rhythm and the rhythm of that motor. If we do, then there is no rejection of what we call that other. It doesn't interfere with our desire to concentrate attention upon our life rhythm. See, this is the marvel, the mystery of life and of the whole manifested universe. The total universe is in every single atom of it. This extraordinary teaching in Zen, which Zen emphasizes a lot, the interdiffusion of everything, irrespective of space-time dimensions. See, these things are not just words. The deep religious truths which have been formulated in such words and concepts have profound reality. When you listen that way, when you see that way, especially when you see simply because the sense of sight plays a paramount part in the lives of the creature called human beings. When you see that way, and you are quiet, really quiet, you will be aware of seeing that which is over and above and quite transcends that which is conveyed through the eyes. And I look at that wall and can be established in that state of vibrant quiescence. I see not only that wall with its definition in terms of a mental construct in my mind, which is the conditioning of my mind, but I become aware of wallness, the ness, the nub of it, the essence. And the meaning of the word essence here is something quite beyond the dictionary meaning. The dictionary meaning, quite naturally and rightly, because of the experience of us as worldlings, is an extraction of something out of a larger bit. You extract something and you say, ah, here is the essence of, what shall we say, vanilla, or whatever it is. Eh? The essence of vanilla. But if you can see or touch or taste or smell vanilla in this manner, with the psychophysical organism in the state of vibrant quiescence, you will experience an essence of vanilla which goes utterly beyond, but does not leave behind, does not cast aside, what is commonly known and experienced as the essence of vanilla. So when you look at a fellow human being, supposing you know him for the last 50 years, you will discover something immensely richer and more marvelous than you ever knew about him. And so many illusions about him, which are pictures, which are one's own conditioned mental constructs, will all vanish away. And you'll see him, as yourself, as all selves. Because you will see him without the cramping, cribbing, confining, damning influence of separateness. You'll see him yourself in the state of wholeness. Then you see the whole all the time through the part, because of the fact of the interdiffusion of the whole with each and every single part of the whole. What happens then to problems of relationship? Are there any problems after that? You see, the extraordinary significance of religiousness, the religious consciousness. You see this and you will understand why I always keep saying that the context of religion is transcendence. And transcendence not defined as so many theologies do, the wholly other than. If you say transcendence is the wholly other than, the definition is a partial definition with all the consequences, the sorrowful consequences of partiality. You may say that transcendence is the wholly other than, but which also completely subsumes all this. That extraordinary insight of the Upanishadic seers, which made them say Brahman is the absolute all. I use the phrase one total reality for this very simple reason, that in our day and age it is easier for one's own perception and understanding to touch this one total reality. Words, names, through the centuries become loaded. They become, and when we come across them, when we read about them, when we are taught about them, God and the angels and all the rest of it, heaven and hell and so forth, the mind gets very conditioned. So use another sound. Words are symbolical sounds, the spoken word. Use another symbolical sound which has not become tied down it would be better to say clogged up in the mire of precise definition. If you want some remarkably instructive examples of this, see how the oldest, especially the pre-Buddhistic Upanishads, speak of Brahman and Atma, and then compare that with a much later Upanishad, such as the Sarvasara, where you get a paragraph long definition of Brahman. So, of course, your zealous divinity student memorizes, laps up the words, and writes them all out in detail for his PhD thesis or whatever it is, and just doesn't know anything at all of Brahman. The real knowledge is not there. The paravidya, the beyond the worldling's knowledge, the aparavidya, which is the realized knowledge, aparavidya, you see, is for him who lives the knowledge, who lives the truth. You see what considering together implies? So many implications. It is a state of communion, is it not? Considering together, not rejecting, not accepting as if from an other person. It is you yourself who gives unto me. It is you yourself who receives from me. The separateness of you and me has vanished. You and I. It is not you and I. It is a non-dual you-I. I-you. And this is not just a feeling. Do remember that. This goes right beyond feeling and thought. Express it in feeling and thought, yes. But the expression is that which is put outside yourself. The impression is that which is deliberately taking into yourself. But in both cases, there is self. There is awareness and consciousness of self. But in the state of vibrant quiescence, there is the reality of the unselfed state. And this unselfed state, in complete fruition and fulfillment, and in those moments when it is tremendously active, produces the phenomenon of the transfiguration of the psychophysical organism. And Moses was in the mount of the Lord for 40 days and nights, and he spoke with the Lord face to face, and when he came down, his face was shining. There's the transfiguration of Jesus. There's the transfiguration of the Buddha. All these things you'll find in the sacred texts. There's the transfiguration of Zarathustra. Those extraordinary situations. Consider this. And Moses and Jesus and the Buddha and Zarathustra will not be that man and that man and that man. It will be you yourself. You will realize transfiguration, although your face may not shine. What a strange, a marvelous thing religion is, and religious truth. Transforms everything into something rich and strange. Those wonderful lines of Shakespeare, "Full fathom five, thy father lies. Of his bones are coral made. Those are pearls that were his eyes." And the way it finishes, of him, the pattern which his son Ferdinand knew as, "This is my father," that's the him referred to, a mental construct. "Of him nothing doth remain." Nothing. Emphasize the nothing. This is important. And all selfness will be gone, if you can emphasize it. "Of him nothing doth remain, but doth suffer a sea change into something rich and strange." Doth suffer, go through, a sea change. The sea is something universal. It happens in the story that they were wrecked. So the word sea comes in. But perhaps Master William Shakespeare, I use the word master in the sense of Mahatma, Master William Shakespeare in his inner enlightenment knew all this. "Doth suffer a sea change into something rich and strange." Don't make a picture of it. Just remain in the state of vibrant quiescence, and you yourself will undergo the sea change. What happens to you when you wake up during the night? Once, twice, three times, as the case may be. What's happening in the brain? Straight away. Is the brain quiet and restful, or is it straight away in a state of turmoil? Watch it. Mindfulness. See, there are worlds and worlds of mindfulness. I use the word worlds in the Buddhist Upanishadic sense. Buddhist and Upanishadic sense. Worlds means states of consciousness, states of being. Doesn't mean planets and galaxies at all. Within this fathom-long body, as the Buddha said, everything happens. It's within this fathom-long body. Because this is the sphere of religious discipline. This is the religious who, by this discipline, by this learning process, becomes the context of transcendence itself. See, hear, touch. In this way, then you don't have to summon up loving kindness or compassion or tenderness. That word mudita is sometimes translated as tenderness, related to the root mud. Very interesting translation. Not only sympathetic joy, sympathetic joy meaning you realize happiness because your brother man has flowered out into the next realization. This is the main source of mudita. In the worldly life, your religion expresses sympathetic joy when a mother gives birth to her baby. It is the manifestation in time and space and in terms of procreative activity of the eternal, unceasing creative activity of transcendence in eternity. That is why marriage and the bringing forth of children is a sacrament, a sacred thing. But it never can be a sacrament and a sacred thing if it has been interfered with by the passion to obtain sensational delight. Those of you who are possible mothers and fathers of the future, if you make your union an act of dedication, be aware, in marital congress, of the reality of transcendence and the process of transcendence is this timeless conjugation of the male and the female, of the positive and the negative energy which brings forth the whole universe. And the act of marital congress is the expression at this level, the biological level, of that. And see what happens. See what you experience. There's no feeling of, now it has ended, it's all over. a sense of dust and ashes, and the fatal passion to repeat one, two, or three occasions when the experience absolutely went right beyond anything you ever knew. See how all these things interfere. The priests, those who are the real priests of the old days, as well as those who have been called the priest kings of the old days, they knew these things. To this day, you can read of hints in the Upanishads. They are there. But scholars have hopelessly missed the point. They just haven't a clue to what on earth the Upanishadic writings mean. This is where the Yoga Upanishads come in very useful. But now don't think that knowing these words or thoughts, now you can immediately make the thing happen. You can't make it happen. If the two organisms live religiously, then in the ripeness of circumstance, nature, whom I have always called Mrs. God, will do the needful and the marvelous thing will happen. Look at the symbols which we have of these things. The Immaculate Conception is one. Do you think we'd have the tragic load of pathetic problems between man and wife which the world suffers from today, perhaps more than ever? We wouldn't. There'd be the reality of love, the reality of wisdom, and that extraordinary understanding which needs no symbols to communicate. Mind directly communicates with mind, because there is only one mind. When the limitations imposed upon my awareness and your awareness by the intense separative consciousness of my psyche and your psyche, then direct transmission cannot take place. But when the psyche is utterly purified, utterly empty, it is transparent, and the light of this creative energy of the universe flows unhindered, and it is that which is the reality of mind in itself, mind in its own, at its own level. You read the Trismegistic writings. God is called All Father Mind, capital M. All Father Mind. That unhappy man who said, religion is the opiate of the people. He never knew peace. He never knew love or beauty. And see the consequence of writing such things. You see why 16 out of 25 lines in print of the Silas in Buddhism are devoted to speech. What is our great practical difficulty? Here we are, happily communing together, or trying to anyway. What is our difficulty? When we go out, to maintain this inner awareness, isn't it? Now, the earnest aspirant, the one who is striving to realize the Supreme Thing, will make violent efforts to put himself back into this atmosphere. You can never do it that way. For one thing, when we go out of the room, this is finished. We have to live in the space-time that is actually present. And if in the space-time that is actually present, there are uprisings, conflict, disturbance, the turmoil and commotion of vijnana, discriminative consciousness, which is being assailed by external impressions, just pay complete attention to the disturbance. Don't fight it. Resist not evil. Jesus was a yogi, but tell that to your devout Christian and he'll say, none of your yogi nonsense here. Jesus was the Son of God. Well, that is precisely another way of saying Brahmaputra or a yogi. Only the languages are different. Observe it, observe it. Just look quietly at it. When that happens, be quite observant. And sometimes it is helpful just to look at an object and experience its ness, its essence, or a person, the person next to you, or a steam engine, if you like, chugging away. Without reacting sensationally to it, don't get excited about it. This is the very devil. And this is what the whole world seeks. Look at the way they say, oh, it's so exciting. Yes, precisely. It's exciting. And therefore, there you are. Look at it like that. And that vibrant quiescence of its own accord will be present again. People's have been sometimes very surprised when I venture to say, I'm concerned with your happiness, your well-being. And they say, how can that fellow be concerned with my happiness? He hardly knows me. I don't need to know him to be concerned about his happiness. I don't need to know him in this worldly sense of the phrase. That which one may have realized within oneself is a permanent faculty, permanently functioning. Because without happiness, there can't be goodness. And without goodness, there can't be happiness. Happiness is the easier way than trying to be good first. Because the organism is constantly functioning in terms of the pleasure-pain mechanism. But goodness, virtue-vice, belongs to a subtler realm, the psyche, which often is quite hidden from our awareness. But the pleasure-pain mechanism of the body is permanently functioning. So in a way, it's the easier thing. Learn the happy way, the play way, the true play. Not the play like some modern football matches. It is very sad. It's a fine, strenuous game, the right thing for youngsters with plenty of energy, all the rest of it. And see what it has degraded into in so many cases. The whole world of play and sport is degraded through commercialization, greed. Consider it. What is another difficulty which we experience from the thousands of worldlings with whom we interplay every day? They turn around impatiently upon us and say, "Oh, that's all very fine philosophy, airy-fairy and up in the clouds. What are you doing about it? Do something about it." Can the person who hasn't truly seen and understood do rightly, profitably? I'm deliberately using a commercial word. Do beautifully, without ill consequence? See why the great religious teachers were concerned with the mind in the manner in which they were concerned. Not like the person who studies psychology, passes exams, and becomes a practitioner. But these people realized the utterly purified state. So that they realized the state of the functioning of mind in its transcendence, working freely through their own brain and psyche. This you have to realize. The perfected holy ones were master psychologists for that reason. They knew the mind of God, the mind of the perfected holy one. They knew the mind of the imperfect one, the mind which is the producer, the maintainer, and the perpetuator of ill, of dukkha. That is why this is so important. How they all fail. Look at the way Dr. Spock has withdrawn what he said years ago. Can't we have Marx and Engels and company alive again and make and use their influence, if they have any enlightenment, retract their words? consider one's own life and way? One is so anxious to help one's brother man. Oh, now I will tell him all I know about this. I've found truth. I've found the real thing. This is it. This is it. Oh, my dear fellow, be quiet. There is a perpetual finding, unsought, perpetual finding. Never say, I have found. It appears to me, such and such is the case. That is all. And if you care for your neighbor, don't try to save him or help him. If you are mature, healthy, right, whole, your very presence will inevitably work upon him as the sun works upon the whole solar system. If you ask the sun, do you bend your energies for the sake of the solar system? All that will happen will be almighty hydrogen explosions all the time. Sun's too busy functioning to think or answer our foolish questions. Be like that. What a world it will become.